This is side one of D315 audio cassette 3, which looks at the politics of racial violence in Britain. It's introduced by Paul Gordon, formerly of the race relations organisation, the Runnymede Trust.
Hello. This cassette is about racial violence and should be played after you've watched the video on the history of racial violence in Britain. The video explores how the issue of racial violence has become a central one in discussions about crime and asks what needs to be done about it. In particular, we looked at the arguments for and against creating a specific criminal offence of racial violence. On this side of the tape, we explore the issue further and talk to three people involved in different ways, in research, in community activism, and in academic work, to try to get a picture of what's happening right now, how we might understand this, and therefore be in a better position to find some possible solutions. First, the research. Satnam Verdi is a researcher at the Policy Studies Institute, a London-based research organisation which has carried out a number of important surveys into the nature and extent of racial discrimination in Britain. The Institute is currently carrying out the fourth national survey on racial discrimination. We asked Satnam Verdi about its findings on racial violence and harassment.
There's been very little research to date carried out on perpetrators of racial violence and harassment. As a result of this, there's been a stereotype that has existed around the perpetrators of racial violence, and that is, as it were, a white youth affiliated possibly to a far-right political party, such as the British National Party. This survey has tried to explore for the first time and develop a perpetrator outline, as it were, a profile of the people that carry out racial harassment. And what we find is actually something which is quite different. We find, for example, that it is ordinary citizens that carry out racial harassment. Perhaps before I describe and go on further, I should describe what I mean by racial harassment. That includes acts of violence, damage to property, but also what people have referred to as low-level racial harassment. And that includes things such as racial abuse, malicious complaints to councils around ethnic minority communities and their actions, racist graffiti, and other types of general nuisance behaviour. And what we found when we actually asked people who the perpetrators of these incidents were, it was quite clear that it was actually neighbours, work people, fellow work colleagues, customers in a workplace, etc. So really it was a reflection of a problem that exists and which is far more deep-rooted than previously thought.
The survey has also sought to find out how the people who are affected by such attacks respond and how the problem affects the ways in which they live their lives.
People responded in many different ways. I think the initial experience of racial harassment can be quite daunting and can be quite intimidating. And I think obviously there was a degree of suffering on the part of these people. But I think it's important that we don't just highlight, as it were, the experiences as victims, because what we found was that there was a wide range of responses. There was one type of response which was actually resisting the racial violence and harassment that was experienced. What has taken place in that context is that, for example, we've seen the rise of self-defence groups for the first time since the mid-70s, late 1970s. That's taken place particularly in areas around East London where the problem has been particularly severe. Secondly, there's been a development of anti-racist organisations where black people have played a leading part. I think more importantly, and something that which hasn't been addressed again, is the impact that it has on individuals who are particularly isolated. Now, what we found was, for example, where ethnic minority individuals are located in predominantly white council estates, their experiences were such that they were forced to adapt their lifestyle in such a way that really they were prisoners in their own homes. So, for example, there were people that reported not being able to leave their house after night for fear of being racially harassed, which was a major problem. Women who wanted to take their children to school found great difficulty in doing this because they were being abused and even possibly attacked in certain situations. It also constrains people's choices in terms of their socialisation experiences. For example, a lot of young ethnic minority people reported that they felt intimidated going to particular social arenas such as sports clubs, sports centres, cinema, theatre, etc., because they would feel that they would get racially harassed. So the effects of racial violence can be quite wide-ranging. And I think also another thing which hasn't really been touched upon in the past is the impact that it has on health. and it seems to be emerging, although the evidence at the moment is quite anecdotal, and I think hopefully the fourth survey will be able to establish in a much more robust way the actual position, but seems to be a direct correlation between physical ill health and mental ill health and the experience of racial harassment.
What does Satnam Verdi see as the crucial issues emerging from his research?
The very first issue that I'd like to raise really in this area is the great controversy that existed over the extent of the problem. To date, there have been two sources, national sources, which have existed on the extent of the problem, reported statistics to the police and the British Crime Surveys of 1988 and 1992. In my opinion, both are very, very inadequate in describing the range and extent of the problem. And I think the first point, obviously, is that the problem is of a far greater scale than previously envisaged and shown by these statistics. So I think there needs to be an establishing of the real extent and nature of the problem, as it were. The second, I think, there needs to be more work done on developing an understanding why people undertake particular actions around racial harassment. Why is it that they engage in racial harassment? I think that one myth or stereotype that needs to be addressed is that there is a common view held that it is the far right engaged predominantly in racial harassment and it is located predominantly within political organisations of the far right. Our research shows that that clearly is not the case, that racial harassment is probably the most direct and extreme expression of the wider racism that exists in society, and that actually the two phenomena have to be connected. And I think that that hasn't been done to date by criminologists or sociologists. I think those two really are the two major issues.
While Satnam Verdi is involved in research into racial violence, Suresh Grover works for the Southall Monitoring Group, an organisation set up in the early 1980s to respond directly to racial violence and police harassment. Suresh Grover gives us the perspective of someone who's involved on a day-to-day level with the reality of racial violence, working with those who have been attacked or who are under threat. We interviewed him at his office situated on a busy and noisy road in West London.
Well, Southall has a particular history, which is different from, say, people living in Hounslow or Hillingdon. Southall has a particular history because ever since the 1950s, when people first came here as workers, they faced racial discrimination. For example, the main struggles that took place in the 50s were around employment, housing, education, etc. On racial attacks and violence, the issue becomes very explosive for us around late 60s and 70s, in a period what we call the Paki bashing period, where gangs of skinheads would come into the areas that we lived in and just beat you because you looked like a Pakistani or they were openly xenophobic and racist. And for a long time in 1970s, early 70s to the middle 70s, we actually fought. We were either attacked in schools or on the streets. And a large number of young people in our communities began to organize as gangs, loosely termed as gangs, not gangs that would, you know, take part in criminal activity, but gangs that would defend each other because you were obviously vulnerable if you were on your own. And there was an underground kind of a hidden violence between white youth and us. We defended ourselves. Many of us got attacked very severely in middle 1970s in Southall. On 4th of June 1976, Kuldeep Singh Chagga was killed in one of these blatant racist attacks. Now, that attack took place right in the center of Southall, outside a place called Dominion Cinema. And because it took place in the center of Southall, which we saw as our place safe from attacks, etc., it galvanized everyone into action. Within, 10 hours, we had 1,000 people on the street. And for something like a whole week, Southall was in grip of frenzied activity of people organizing and mobilizing against racist attacks, etc. It was coming to terms with understanding a reality that in order for us to be safe, we had to organize, and we couldn't be portrayed in the way that the media was portraying us, that Indians specifically would always turn the other cheek and we were too weak to fight. or that we were members of gangs and that's why we were the offenders, etc. And since then, we've had a history of massive mobilization in Southall against racism and racial attacks. The important periods are 79, when we organized against the National Front. There were obviously more than 5,000 to 10,000 people on the streets on 23rd of April, when Blair was killed by the police because he was a part of a demonstration against the National Front. Over 345 people were charged, people who belonged to local community, because they dared to protest against racism. Again in 81, when the skinheads came from the East London, had a racist gig in a pub called Hambro Tavern, we mobilized and the pub was burned down in self-defense. Since then, Southall has earned a right and a just reputation of being a Nazi-free zone. Yeah, so it was a culmination of over 15 years of struggle, if not more, directly on the streets, which is really the history of Southland in terms of racial attacks and violence.